National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello talks with EWTN's Rome Bureau Chief Joan Lewis to bring us the latest news on Pope Francis and the Vatican. Also, Jeanette talks with British journalist Joanna Bogle about her recent Register commentary, The Queen's Good Servants, But God's First. That's all about Britain's legalization of same-sex so-called marriage. And I just love indirect references to St. Thomas More. That just makes my day. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register.
It's good to be here, Tom.
Good to have you here in the studio with us in Birmingham. We're all in town for the EWTN family celebration.
Yes, it's a very great time to be here. It's really exciting, actually.
Always a pleasure to have Joan Lewis here in the studio with us. She's been EWTN's Rome Bureau Chief since 2005. She has had an extensive career in the Eternal City, including 15 years with the Vatican Information Service, part of the Holy See's press office, as the English language writer and editor. She, as we say, is in Birmingham for the EWTN family celebration. She's here in our studio to discuss Pope Francis, his recent World Youth Day trip, changes with the Vatican Bank, and some expected changes to the Vatican governance. Joan, welcome to Register Radio.
Oh, it is just terrific to be here with my colleagues. Working alone in Rome, it's wonderful to come to the States and then see the faces that belong with the names or see the people I've known for many years.
Absolutely.
Since 2005.
I feel the same way. I'm usually in Denver, and it's always good to be here in the studio. And today, we're talking to you. You're on the first couple days of a vacation, though.
So finally,
this is how you're spending the first few days of your vacation. What else are you doing on vacation?
Actually, the most interesting part will be the last part. After Birmingham, I will be going to California to see family, lots of nieces and nephews, and then to Hawaii. Because nice. I went there last summer to do research on now St. Marianne Cope, and we know there's St. Damien. I did a lot of research and took a trip to Hawaii before his canonization. But there's a third party a lot of people don't know about. There's Brother Joseph Dutton, who worked next to our two saints for 44 years on the peninsula of Kalaupapa, helping Damien and Marianne work with the victims of leprosy. So I will be visiting the colony again and doing a story on perhaps Kalaupapa's third saint.
That is very interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating.
So
absolutely,
you never really do take a vacation.
No, I really, really don't. Yeah. I mean, I love what I'm doing, and sometimes when you love what you're doing, maybe all the time, it's not work.
Yeah.
I think it's like Joanna, you'll have her on in a minute, and she loves cooking, so it's not work when
exactly.
You love it.
Sure.
You know?
Well, you know, you make me think of the last 6 months, which are probably some of the busiest 6 months that you maybe have ever had at the Vatican.
In my life.
Yes. In your life, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely in my life. And I know that in the 3.5 weeks that my colleagues were all in Rome and we were doing, you know, it seemed like 24/7 television and radio and just on the go, mm-hmm, night and day.
Sure.
And then my colleagues could come back to Birmingham, go home, maybe take a few days off for all the overtime we did.
Right.
And I was there to cover the papacy.
Exactly.
And I have dubbed Pope Francis's papacy the papacy of surprises.
I bet, exactly.
Because every day you simply don't know how he's going to handle even a given situation.
Sure.
That we've seen popes for 20 or 30 years, a liturgy, whatever, do something in a certain way. And Francis has his own imprint, this immense charism. We saw it. We see it every moment he's in public. We saw it on a humongous scale, obviously, in Rio.
Yes,
and
yes, sure.
His ability to, he's a magnet. His ability to draw people to him, believers and non-believers. Because I talk to a lot of people, to priests, to so many people who get
sure.
input from their parishioners, from whatever. His ability to make people listen to him. John Paul and Benedict were wonderful teachers.
Right.
Benedict, the theologian, an amazing man who someday probably will be a doctor of the church. But Francis talks to all of us as we would talk to each other.
Sure.
You know, he'll sit here and he'll say, Jeanette and Tom, and his phraseology, his sentences will be just everyday
right.
Communication. And he will when he wants to emphasize a point, he says, now, wait a minute, Jeanette, did you understand what I said?
Sure.
And he'll repeat it. And you find yourself listening to everything.
Absolutely.
You're not kind of sitting there on your phone looking for something more interesting. He's the man.
And one of the things he says a lot in his, especially homilies or maybe the Angelus, is answer this in your heart. And he asks a question, which is really a type of examination of conscience. And I just love that. He did it quite often in Rio de Janeiro, and I've heard him do it since. And it really is a profound way.
He gets you involved. It's not so much preaching to you, teaching to you.
Right.
I was a teacher for many years, and I know that a lot of people said that when I was helping in the interregnum and everything else, it was telling people what they probably would be interested in and want to know, but just on a conversational basis.
Right.
I never considered the television, obviously, an enemy. It was a friend. It was another person I could talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he does.
Exactly.
He involves you.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Joan Lewis about the latest Vatican news. Well, let's talk a little bit about Rio. I mean, obviously, that's one of the biggest news items of the summer. It was his first pastoral trip outside of Italy.
Yeah.
As a journalist, as someone who's covered popes in the Vatican for a long time, what were some of the highlights that you see that we might not notice, but we can take away from that experience as wow, that's Francis, that's what he's offering the church?
I don't know if I noticed anything different. I was not in Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was in Rome doing a lot of translating of information, trivia, background, historic things for the people who were on TV. And then I watched all the stuff live, sometimes very late,
sure.
In the wee small hours. But I probably really saw what everybody else did, his tremendous love for humanity. His own humanity, mm-hmm. his hunger to be with the people. We're all brothers and sisters. And he doesn't just say that. He lives that.
Sure.
And he, when he caresses the baby, this is not for a photo op. He really loves that little baby. Or when he's with a disabled person, it's the same thing.
Right.
Because he's always worked when he was in Buenos Aires. He worked among the have-nots,
right.
And the disabled and the poor, and he's just, that's what he's brought to his papacy.
Sure. And that's what he called his priests to do when he was in Buenos Aires,
right.
As well. Now, it seems as though he is living that out again on his vacation. Like you, he doesn't seem to take a full vacation. Tell us what he's been doing in the month of August, which is usually a time when most popes even, have left Rome.
For Castel Gandolfo. And it was very interesting. He was in Castel Gandolfo, of course, for the Assumption, and said Mass there in St. Thomas, the little beautiful parish church. But back at Santa Marta, and you can kind of understand why he wants to be at Santa Marta, because, for example, I think it was last week, a group of young people in a vocational institute mm-hmm. came to Rome, and they attended a Mass, and they let it be known to, I don't know whoever, that they really would love to meet the Holy Father. Word got to the Holy Father. A couple hours later, he came out of Santa Marta. He met these 60 kids, took a group picture, met each one of them individually, which I don't think would have happened had he been in the Apostolic Palace. But his desire to even be a teacher in that way is
right.
an amazing thing.
And just to be near to the people.
But he's working on a lot of issues. We know the Vatican Bank has headlined mm-hmm. Things in recent months, and the Pope has set up a committee. He's done some very good organizational things. We know he, months ago, set up, called 8 cardinals to be an advisory
right.
body on many, many issues, not just the bank. So they will meet October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in the Vatican.
Right.
But he's in touch with them every day. And I've had a lot of people ask me about, gee, why hasn't he made bigger changes in the Vatican yet? He didn't come in to sweep out all of the personnel with one fell swoop. We know there's eventually going to be a new Secretary of State and other people to head other offices. But he's probably going to streamline
sure.
some of the offices, particularly, I think, pontifical councils more than congregations. And Francis is a man he's studying papers, he's reviewing things he's gotten from Pope Benedict. He is a person who sits down, listens to people very, very carefully, and he's not going to make any big change, even a small change, until he feels perfectly competent. I have all the information I need. I can now move. If he's going slower, that's good for all of us.
Right.
And I'm sure there's a few people quaking in their boots in the Vatican wondering if they're going to be here or not at Christmas time. But if they deserve to be there, I think they'll be there. And if the Vatican has to be streamlined, then it'll be streamlined. And it's all going to be for the better. But this is a man who's known for his administrative skills.
Yeah, so. Some of these things were kind of overdue. Not to blame any of his predecessors, but, you know, some people are really, really good with admin.
Well, you know, I mean, one thing we have learned from some of the cardinals and so forth, before they went in to the conclave, it was, okay, what do we want in our new pope?
Yeah.
They wanted a holy man. That turned out to be like the number one quality. And they wanted a person who would be an administrator, who knew how to be a CEO as well as a holy father. Mm. And we got that in Francis. A lot of people thought maybe the cardinals would choose a younger man, mm-hmm. and maybe a man of many, many languages like John Paul and Benedict. But that was not the case. And I am one of those many, many people that believe the church got the Holy Father it needed at the time we needed a man of his charism, his skills.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Joan Lewis about the latest Vatican news. We have 1 minute to go, and one of the things I wonder how it influences the Jesuit character. Like, as we close, what does his Jesuit character bring into his papacy?
Everything that a Jesuit is known for, but I want to point out one thing that was pointed out to me early in his pontificate. Have Jesuits, when they are going to write a paper, give a talk, prepare a homily, give a speech, they focus on 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
The number 3 is very important for a Jesuit. Every single time you hear the Pope outline something, you're going to say, now, ladies and gentlemen, or boys and girls, or whoever he's talking to, today I want to focus on 3 points. Whatever the framework of that day is.
Mm. And he's certainly
He's
done
a Jesuit,
that.
Certainly as a teacher.
Right.
The love of poverty
mm-hmm.
is
right.
Obviously the first thing we all notice. Just the choice of the name Francis is
right.
wonderful.
Right.
And I think that's the most those are the two most outstanding things.
Excellent. Well, Joan, thank you so much for being here. It's been great to talk to you.
Well, my joy will probably be together at the family celebration this
absolutely.
Weekend.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So people can come up and say hello.
Ci vediamo. I'll see you.
Very
Ci
good.
Vediamo.
When we return, we'll have the latest from Britain from our friend Joanna Bogle. So don't go away. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
John at Bankovic talks about the National Catholic Register.
I recommend the National Catholic Register to all Catholics who want to discover what it means to live their faith in this our day and time. We get the clear, unbiased news of today because the National Catholic Register takes its cue from the mind and the heart of the Church. It really becomes a tool by which we are able to live that abundant life in Jesus Christ and to share that life with others. The National Catholic Register seeks to meet people where they are, seeks to meet people where they are in their walk of faith, where they are practically in their lives at the moment.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Joanna Bogle, is an author, journalist, and broadcaster living in London. She's a frequent speaker at women's organizations, youth groups, and Catholic and ecumenical events and conferences. Joanna broadcasts regularly with the BBC and other TV and radio stations. She also lectures to schools, colleges, and community groups around Britain. She also is visiting Birmingham for EWTN's family celebration. She is visiting our Register Radio studio today to talk about her recent Register commentary, the Queen's good servants, but God's first. And that's all about Britain's legalization of same-sex so-called marriage. Joanna, welcome to Register Radio.
It's lovely to be here.
And delight to have you.
Joanna, it's such a pleasure to actually be sitting right here with you. I know you traveled last night, so it's a rough morning, but it's okay. We are grateful to see you. And, you know, when I edited your piece last week before we put it on the Register's website, it was the first time that I had actually read your work. Even though you've worked for the Register, you've written for us in the past, I'm newer to the Register than you are. But I went to your blog spot, Auntie Joanna, and it was wonderful. First of all, why Auntie Joanna?
Yes, I enjoy writing a blog. It's one of life's little pleasures. Well, to be honest, it's quite simple. I have nieces and nephews, one of life's better inventions in my experience. And when I started to set up an email, do you remember when we all began email, when it was all new? I didn't really understand what it was. And my nephew, who'd come to stay with us to set up our computer, and he began by saying, "Well, Auntie Joanna and Uncle Jamie, this is a computer," you know, and explained, "This is the screen, this is etc." And he said, "What do you want for your email address?" And I didn't really understand. And I said, "Well, Auntie Joanna, you see, because that's what he calls me. He's my nephew." And so by the time I got my blog, it had stuck. And it is rather sweet because I get people writing, "Dear Auntie," and so on. Aww. And it's sort of easier in a way because people who don't quite want to start "Dear Joanna," for example, mm-hmm. younger people. I mean, we all use Christian names all the time these days, but some younger people don't. And so they write "Dear Auntie" because Mrs. Bogle is sort of not what we
formal.
Say anymore. Yes,
right.
So it sort of works really well. And I've had all sorts of people, including quite senior clergymen, "Dear Auntie Joanna." It's sort of fun. I enjoy it. But it's a genuine thing. And thanks to my nephew Edmund for that.
It's a very nice way of introducing you and also your blog itself. It's very personal. I was reading on the Feast of the Assumption, and you were talking about how lovely it is to have a feast day that's actually solemnly celebrated on that particular day. But you also made a comment that stuck out to me, and that was that last year in 2012, the most common name or the most popular name for a boy in Britain was Mohammed. And you just remarked at how interesting and perhaps a little frightening that is. Tell me about that.
Yes, it's very scary. Christian Europe is dying, slipping away from us. It's actually the second most common name of all the names that are registered. Yes, it is very frightening. And the Britain I knew and love very dearly is slipping away. There are going to be some very tough times in the future. Mm-hmm. I think, under God, we may be able to make some kind of a country and a community out of what we're getting, but it isn't what we've ever had before. And the Britain of the future is going to be a tough place. The one thing we all need is the new evangelization,
absolutely.
To which I'm committed 100%, and
absolutely.
It just needs an awful lot of prayer. I also was describing on my blog, and with great joy, because it was a delight, the recent walking pilgrimage to Walsingham.
That's right.
And there are a number of groups that walk to Walsingham. It's one of the things we do. It's our national shrine, and it's right on the very, very edge of England. It's about 6 miles from the sea in East Anglia, sort of the bit of England furthest away from America, if I may so describe it. And it's extremely beautiful, and the English countryside is almost unbearably lovely in August. I mean, rippling fields of wheat and sugar beet glistening after the rain. And we were praying to Our Lady, because England is Mary's diary.
Absolutely.
So please, oh please, Mary, keep the faith for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's going to be tough in the future, yes.
Well, we join you in those prayers. I think we're facing the same situation in the United States. This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with London author Joanna Bogle about the legalization of so-called same-sex marriage in Great Britain. Now let's talk about that commentary that you wrote for the Register, "The Queen's Good Servants, But God's First." It was published on August 7th, so last week. And this was in reference to July 17th, when Queen Elizabeth II actually assented to the legislation that was brought before her to legalize so-called marriage, same-sex marriage. And what were your comments about this particular moment in British history?
Well, it's a horrible feeling, isn't it, when it suddenly becomes law? Of course, there'd been an enormous campaign against it, an excellent organization, mm-hmm. Coalition for Marriage, brought together all the good people who were fighting to affirm the truth about marriage. Marriage can only be, of its very nature, is only between a man and a woman. And they collected signatures for a petition and so on. What is tragic is that actually there was massive scope to amend the law, and it was the government that railroaded through the wretched legislation, blocked all attempts to safeguard the rights and freedoms of free speech, of the rights of Catholic schools to teach what is true and yes. right about marriage, and so on. And there were a great many useful amendments which were blocked. We've been given all sorts of rather pointless verbal assurances. I don't trust the reassurances that Mr. Cameron and others have given. I think we will see a number of lawsuits. And although I don't think the problem really is for marriages in church, nobody can force the church to marry two men any more than they can force us to use apples and meringues for the Holy Eucharist. Yes, I mean, yes. Of course not. But it's more to do with what schools are allowed to teach, and indeed what you and I are allowed to teach and say in public. And I am worried about that. I'm very worried indeed. I think it's going to be rather ghastly.
Yeah. Right. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with London author Joanna Bogle about the legalization of so-called same-sex marriage in Great Britain. And even though the church cannot be forced to provide a sacrament with something that is not the material of a sacrament, there are lawsuits that are threatening against the Church of England, which still does not allow so-called same-sex marriage, but these lawsuits are coming.
They are. The position of the Church of England is a difficult one because of the position of the established church. It's a very good reason for not having an established church, in my view. We have a certain freedom as Catholics there. Yes, and the lawsuits themselves would be deeply unpleasant, time-consuming, financially boring, and it would be very unedifying to have the nation ripping itself apart in this way. But yes, I think we will see some legal things. And then there are other difficulties, such as, this is already happening actually, the use of a church hall for a reception, for example, for two men or three or whatever rubbish the government comes up with next, who want to get married and who want to hire a hall for their party. I mentioned this to my parish priest a little while ago. We have, as so many parishes have, a very agreeable hall, you know, and in the ordinary way, very nice to have it used by all sorts of community groups. You don't find that a bore. It's all part of community life and so on. Well, of course, that won't happen. So, in fact, Catholic halls will probably not rent themselves out, which is a loss of income, but it's also a pity. I mean, it's rather nice if the local Catholic parish hall is used by the local ballet class or anything you like, and that, I think, will be restricted. I am concerned about this, and I'm not alone in that, but also in our common life. I mean, it's all going to be frightfully boring, isn't it? We're going to have two blokes turning up at Buckingham Palace, you know, being a married couple at a garden party, to give one stupid random example, and all this sort of bring your partner and all this sort of drivel. And I'm not sure it will stop at two people. I mean, if you think two men can get married, why not a man and his parrot? I mean, the whole thing's getting stupid. Why not five people?
It's difficult to understand where it would, in fact, stop. And you mentioned something that's very important. It's not what we obviously think of when we think of a threat to religious liberty, because we often think of the church being forced to do something. But it's really how it changes everyday language. It's how it changes the way we talk and the way we express our opinions, the way we express our beliefs. So it has a lot more to do with people like you and me who are just living in the community. And how do you see it affecting the common person, the common worker?
I do see it affecting us with our speech, our right to teach children in particular. I'm conscious that people now do something that I never thought I'd live to see British people doing, which is sort of glancing to left and right and then lowering their voice before giving an opinion on these things.
Wow.
And I find that rather frightening. It's quite unconscious. And I was brought up so much to believe that my country was a place of freedom, and that this freedom was consecrated by the great sacrifices that were made. And, you know, the Magna Carta drawn up by the barons and the abbots was drawn up initially at Bury St. Edmunds Abbey, where I was the other day for Mass on this walk to Walsingham. It's ruined, of course, destroyed under Henry VIII. And the first opening words of Magna Carta are, "That the English Church shall be free." And then King John signed it on Magna Carta Island at Runnymede. And just above Runnymede, there's an enormous memorial. It's got my uncle's name on it.
Oh, wow.
He was one of the Royal Air Force chaps who was killed in the Second World War. Wow. Just one name among thousands. Well, I know why he died, and I was told why he died, and he knew why he thought his life was worth risking. Freedom is not trivial. That the English Church may be free is not trivial.
Absolutely. Well said. Very well said.
Really.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with London author Joanna Bogle about the legalization of so-called same-sex marriage in Great Britain. Now, Joanna, as we close, I mean, these are deep things. These are disappointing things and depressing things. Where is our hope?
Well, our hope is in God and in the church. We have had some wonderful leadership in recent years. The next book I'm working on, and I'm loving it, is about the great John Paul. And he gave us a wonderful example. And Benedict gave us the most thrilling, beautiful insights. When he came to Britain, he lifted our hearts. He too scooped up babies and kissed the tops of their heads. He was an absolute darling, and he softened hearts and opened them to God. We have been greatly blessed by the successes of Peter we've had in recent years. And John Paul told us, do not be afraid. And he also gave us an example of how you cope in a situation where you have lost your freedom. It's culture that changes history over the long haul. People in Poland were not free. They had a stupid, rotten communist government. But they lived and celebrated their faith, and God rewarded them with a great Polish pope. I don't believe God will let us down. We mustn't be afraid.
Wow, good news there. Be not afraid. Joanna Bogle, thank you so much for joining us this week on Register Radio. I want to remind everybody, for those of you here in Birmingham or those of you coming to Birmingham for the family celebration, all of us will be at the family celebration. We would love to meet you. That's why we have these family celebrations. Don't forget, all of us here at Register, thank you so much for joining us on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.